Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Back in the city in just a few days. And then a few weeks after that, I'll be premiering the film that I've been working on all this time. Today, the latest on health and healing. New information on how vitamin C influences gene activity in stem cells. Very exciting. For those of you who are in pain, the best supplements for pain relief. Also, they have a new type of brain surgery for people who are depressed. They say it's safe and effective. I say it's crazy. Also, my guest today, Dr. Stephen Goldsmith, will look at the paradoxes behind natural medicine and how it is so radically different to differentiate its fundamental ideas from conventional modern medical therapy. Dr. Goldsmith is a board-certified physician and psychiatrist. He received his medical degree from Columbia College of Physicians and Surgeons. He's been practicing for 40 years, and he was a former professor at the medical schools of Boston University, Tufts University, and New York School of Medicine. So he has a lot to share. If time permits, I want to do commentaries today on fascism in America. I have a clip of some individuals from different political perspectives and different ideologies, and set aside that for a moment. They actually got this right. I think we have to pay attention now and look at what all of us have in common. We are all being subjected to unreasonable searches of our communications, our right to habeas corpus, our right to free speech and assembly, our right to protest, even in the most passive, nonviolent manner. We now are deemed enemies of the state. But I'm going to take you behind this. Denouncing the National Security Agency surveillance is not enough. According to Norman Solomon, we need the power to stop it. But before there was the national security leaks, there was Echelon. I did at least 20 reports on Echelon. And I remember at the time, I was in the studio at WBAI, and after I did this important report, and with a whistleblower at the time from England, documenting everything, I came out of the studio, and a producer of another program comes up to me, and he said, "You really don't believe all this, do you?" And I said, "Yes, I do." He said, "Well, then that's just crazy." Well, it turns out none of it's crazy. Also from Alexander Coburn and Jeffrey St. Clair, The American Way of Torture. We have a lot to share. All of this based upon progressive ideals, meaning finding the truth wherever it is. Let's begin. We are a nation in pain. It is estimated that the number one reason people see a physician is because of chronic pain. And what do we do about it? Well, we do everything wrong. I mean, everything wrong. First, we do not do comprehensive physical and psychological examinations, because we now know that if you are highly stressed, or if you're anxious, or if you're depressed, that can change your biochemistry, alter your balance of hormones, especially the stress hormones, and that can cause local inflammation. We also know that if we're allergic to different things, whether it's corn or genetically modified soy or dairy or gluten and wheat, that we can also manifest pains in the gut, the ankles, the knees, the fingers, even in the brain. We also don't look for pro-inflammatory conditions. Rare is the physician that would take an hour to discuss your lifestyle to see maybe something in your work environment. Might be the outgassing from your desk. Could be that new carpet you put in with the formaldehyde outgassing. It might be the fluoride or chlorine in your water or your shower. No one's asking these questions unless they are trained to do so. Chronic pain is literally an epidemic. We conservatively estimate that it affects 1.5 billion people worldwide, costing us hundreds of billions of dollars because of debilitation coming from pain. but also debilitating pain affects individuals that have heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. More people have pain than those all combined. And then we give opiates, morphine, and non-steroidal antidotes like salicylates, such as aspirin, ibuprofen, antidepressants, anti-epileptics, anti-nerve growth factors, inhibitors. All of these drugs have terrible side effects, and they frequently are addictive. In fact, the prescription over the prescription of pain medication is the fastest growing drug addiction in North America. And we're not addressing it unless we look for alternatives. Here are the natural ways of relieving pain where you can actually help yourself. First and foremost, have at least 3 glasses of a proteolytic enzyme drink each day. Now, what would that be specifically? Well, the proteolytic enzymes are specific enzymes that metabolize protein. These enzymes are naturally produced, and they complement other living organisms, and they carry out essential functions. For example, they reduce inflammation of the very dangerous C-reactive protein molecule, and that, when it's elevated, will cause your arterial plaques and blood clots and scar tissue. It also helps reduce swelling and pain and edema. It also helps you to deal better with cancer growth and allows your immune system to destroy tumorous growth. So you can go into any health food store and ask for proteolytic enzymes. But you could also take papaya and pineapple core and put that into a blender. That's one good way to get it. Then you have 3 superstars, turmeric, ginger, and Boswellia. Boswellia, B-O-S-W-E-L-I-A. Now, taking these in the right amount helps anti-inflammatory responses in the body. It reduces swelling, reduces inflammation. They're extremely beneficial antioxidants in addition. Then the omega-3 fatty acids, as well as astaxanthin. Omega-3 fatty acids and astaxanthin reduce inflammation, and they also provide better cell membrane receptor activity and provide strong antioxidant capacity. That reduces inflammation and pain. Probiotics are essential because they help us heal the leaky gut, along with glutamine, alpha-lipoic acid, and grapeseed extract. Parasites often release toxins that increase inflammation within the body. And a lot of people have parasites. Where do you get parasites? Well, there are several places. First and foremost, eating salads in restaurants. You have no idea how dirty most kitchens are. Or you may not have a dirty kitchen in all cases, but you can have people who work in the kitchen with dirty hands. Now, there's a little reality that most people are not aware of. Recently, while I was in Manhattan, before going to a Broadway show with my daughter, we stopped off at a natural food restaurant. And I looked at the menu and I saw some things that we could eat. And then I asked a simple question. Who is your chef? And the person looked at me and says, well, we don't have a chef. And I said, then who does your cooking? And, well, some individuals. And later, I walked down the steps. I went into the kitchen, and there the place was a little, like a little factory. There was no chef, just people. I have no problem with them. They're doing the best they can to make a living. But the sanitation was not hygienic. And you could see how much of their hands were being used in decorating plates, and their hands were filthy. And when people go to the bathroom, you don't know if they actually wash their hands or not. So that's fine. It's not my business to tell them how to run a restaurant. But it is my business not to get parasites. It's just too easy. And so I ate the food that was cooked, like brown rice and some refried beans and garlic. Nothing that I would eat on that plate came from anything raw. That's how I approach that. Unless I know that the food is clean, the people's hygiene are high. Now, there are restaurants where they have very high standards, but generally you have a master chef, a sous chef, you have a dessert chef, you have a salad chef. They're all working, and they're working at high standards. But that's not the norm. So just remember, what you eat raw out, more often than not, is what's going to give you bacteria, fungi, parasites you didn't expect. So probiotics are important. They help rebuild healthy bacteria in the gut, generally 3 times a day. Then what is called MSM. This means sulfur. Onions, garlic, chives, scallions, cruciferous vegetables. These are where you get your high-quality sulfur input. The more these you take in, the better it is. In fact, just recently, I found on the road at a farmer's market, I found some, potatoes. They weren't certified organic, but that's stupid. That doesn't have to be certified. Going through the certification process, which I've gone through, it can take years, thousands of dollars, and I simply asked some questions. How large is your farm? Oh, it's 1.5 acres. What do you spray? Oh, I don't spray anything. Why not? Well, A, I know how bad sprays can be. Ask anyone in here, and they'll tell you, the people who use the sprays end up with miscarriages. They have ulcers on their legs and hands. No, we don't use the sprays. It's not necessary. Then that means it's organic. It's just not certified, and that's fine with me. Then you wash it, and scrubbing the outside of a potato is easy. You scrub it down thoroughly and rinse it. Then you take a knife and you cut the potato on top, bottom, and on both sides in about 1/2 inch. That allows for the heat to escape, giving a more even cooking. Otherwise, what a lot of people do, they tend to overcook the outside, but it's still wet and hard on the inside. When you release the steam, then the potato is going to cook faster and more evenly, so it's nice and fluffy. Then you take a little bit of coconut oil and you massage it on your hands and you massage the potato. That keeps the skin from scorching, which means then you can eat the skin and it's still nutritious. It has alpha-lipoic acid in it. Then sautéing some garlic, and I sauté a lot of garlic. Then after the potato is baked, I then stuff the potato, mash it up inside, putting in garlic, some raw sweet onion, and some Himalayan sea salt, some black pepper, and a little fresh basil, and some lemon juice. And it's the lemon juice that really pops the flavor. Well, I can eat 2 of those, and that's a whole meal. And then with my powders, I'm good to go. But you're getting sulfur. When you're on the road, and you're traveling, and you're flying, and you're around people who are, more often than not, someone's going to be sick, we're all going to be exposed, and that's fine. We go to movie theaters and concerts and plays, and no one should go in and, be fearful of that because of contamination. Just keep your immune system strong. Your immune system strong, you're going to be able to face and defeat almost all microorganisms. That's why those who are healthy can withstand the assault on their immune system that others who are weak or stressed cannot. We also want magnesium. If there's one mineral above all other minerals that helps you when you have pain, it is magnesium. I suggest taking magnesium with calcium in the evening. That's when it works best. It's catabolic. And it can help relax your muscles. It maximizes blood flow. It allows nutrients to be delivered to your cells and debris taken away. It can reduce muscle spasms and cramping and poor blood flow and lowered intracellular nutrient delivery. Now, you get magnesium from your dark green leafy vegetables and sprouted seeds and raw cacao. All these do it. And then you have your methylating agents. Methylation is crucial for DNA repair. And this would be like trimethylglycine and very important into your system. That also helps lower the chance of heart disease. And finally today, in our area of health and nutrition, two things. First, there is a new form of psychosurgery. And here's what Natural News says about it. Imagine that you're severely depressed or suffer from chronic or disruptive or obsessive or compulsive behavior. No one knows what to do with you, and you're not seeking out holistic therapy. So you go to your doctor and the psychiatrist says, well, we've got a new form of psychosurgery. And so your psychiatrist suggests that you may qualify for bilateral capsulotomy. And you think, okay, well, the doctor will drill a hole, bore two holes in your skull. Then he will attach electrodes to your brain. And then he heats them up. And then you'll smell something. Well, that's your brain frying, literally frying. It'll effectively kill brain matter with the goal of disconnecting certain areas of the brain so that you no longer talk one side of the brain to the other. And you're told that this surgery has been around for a while, so it's not experimental, and it's been declared safe and effective this year. You truly believe you're out of options, and therefore this was a good thing. It's not. It's barbaric. And it's not going to help you. It's not going to heal you. It's not going to make anything go away. It's like electroconvulsive therapy. All that you're going to do is get a grand mal seizure, and then you hopefully will have that part of your brain that you remember things that were bad from your past destroyed, but it doesn't always work. But it does destroy memory. That it does do. So that's how they deal with it. In essence, the medical definition of intractable seems to be anything your doctor or mainstream medical health professionals can't fix. So everyone's told, well, your depression's intractable. No, it's not. The declaration of the bilateral capsulotomy as safe and effective, it is not. And what you should be doing instead is look for holistic psychiatrists, look for holistic psychotherapists, people specializing in trauma work, orthomolecular medicine, exposure therapy, deep conscious therapy. These are real healing modalities. These are what help people, not this kind of nonsense. But that doesn't keep it from being promoted, and people will do almost anything if promoted. One other thing, I'll talk on my next program about President Obama signing a new executive order that mandates everyone get an HIV shot or get an HIV test. This is the latest. This is from Ethan Huff. Quote, HIV vaccine infects 41 volunteers. Vaccine trial canceled. Quote, yet another experimental vaccine for HIV has proven to be even more dangerous than the virus itself. At least 40 men participating in a taxpayer-funded government study entitled HIV 505 clinical trial, which began in 2009, were recently found to have contracted HIV from the vaccine itself, prompting an immediate end to the deadly trial. Crafted by the National Institutes of Health, the study initially included more than 2,500 men from 19 cities. All the men admitted to their having sex with other men or to having sex with transgender individuals. Half the men were assigned to receive the experimental vaccine, the HVTN-505, while the other half were reportedly given a placebo vaccine with unknown contents. However, a recent safety review conducted just 3 months ago revealed that 41 men in the group contracted HIV despite having received the jab. Only 30 men in the placebo group, on the other hand, contracted HIV. And then it was reviewed more carefully and found out that the vaccine actually increased the viral load and infected the men. Every single experimental HIV vaccine has failed. Every single one. And it's going to fail because they've been working with the wrong paradigm, and we've explained that time and again. So how about that? People got a vaccine, and now they have AIDS because of the vaccine. Finally, I mentioned vitamin C. This is from the University of California, San Francisco. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature, the most prestigious scientific journal in the world. Quote, A study of mouse stem cell reveals that vitamin C may play a role in their health by influencing the switching on and off of genes. The researchers suggest it could have an important effect on the development of mice, humans, and other animals, and finding out more about the underlying mechanisms could improve our understanding of in vitro fertilization cancer in adult stem cells. So, the fact that vitamin C acts on TET enzymes to influence DNA methylation is very important. One more reason to include vitamin C into your diet. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Chances are, 'cause I wear a silly grin, the moment you come into view. Chances are you think that I'm in love with you.
I'd like to say hello to all of you from all over the world. I was just sent last evening some of the latest statistics, and we are still way ahead of everyone in the world, except one guy in South Africa. With people listening to our radio broadcast over a telephone. Now, you're looking at thousands and thousands of companies and broadcasters, but we just got this notification from the service, number one. So if you want to listen to this program from anywhere over the telephone, here's the number. Keep it with you. 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. And I was told we're approaching 5 million minutes listened. That's hundreds of thousands of people. Before we go to our guest, Dr. Stephen Goldsmith, to continue our discussion of the difference between medicine's approach to helping you from a natural or a, let's say, an orthodox approach, which will be in a few moments, and I intend to get to some of our commentary before my guest, we have one of our five nutritionists on the line now. Her name is Sandy. She works on Sundays. We have two nutritionists that I have hired that work every day counseling people. And for those of you who benefited from their work, you know how important it is, especially at times where people are financially stressed, because it's free. I pay them a very nice salary with benefits so that you don't have to. You have to see them in person, not over the phone, and they will help guide you in their areas of expertise. And we've had probably 22,000, 23,000 people who benefited. That way it allows me to devote my time to those who are most challenged. Let's say hello to Sandy. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Gary.
And Sandy, who do you have on the line?
I have Tanya on the line today.
Okay. Tanya, are you there?
Hi, everyone. I'm Tanya.
Tanya, what condition did you have that you sought Sandy's help?
I originally went to Sandy because I was having a hard time with my circulation and breathing, and I happen to actually be a holistic practitioner myself and really wanted to go to a holistic nutritionist, and I found Sandy, and my circulation is better for the first time in many years. I'm actually able to eat certain food that, you know, she's helped me go through a whole series of things where I'm able to eat those foods that I was actually allergic to, and I'm not getting the numbness, and my breathing is actually much better. She was really able to help me.
So you feel happy about the service she provided you?
I'm very happy, and I do want to add that being that I'm in this field, I'm very, very picky with who I speak to, and I've spoken to many nutritionists in the past that have not been able to help me, and I feel that she was really able to get me on an emotional and spiritual level and help me be way beyond my expectation. I highly recommend her. I'm very, very happy with the services.
Well, thank you, Tanya. I appreciate that. And thank you, Sandy, for helping these people. Look, I'm not there each day, and I don't sit in on their sessions, so I don't know who they're helping. So when I hear that someone would like to make a statement, that's encouraging. So if anyone in this audience is needing some help with their health and needing some lifestyle and behavior modification, we have five different people, all with different backgrounds, all who I handpicked because of their human values, their gentleness, and their knowledge and skills. And all you have to do is just show up. And if you want to make an appointment, you can call 212-874-4000. 212-874-4000. Sandy's there on Sundays from, I think, 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. But we have people there every day from 10 in the morning till 10 at night. And it's a public service. Nothing to buy, no money you have to spend. It's just there to help people. Now, let's go over to some of the other latest information that is important. This comes from Steve Horn of the Smog Blog. The Keystone XL scandal. Obama's attorney's law firm represents Trans-Canada Pipeline in Canada. An investigation reveals that Robert Bauer, former White House counsel and President Obama's personal attorney, works at the corporate law firm of Perkins Coie, LLP, which does legal work for TransCanada's South Central LNG project, formerly known as Alaska Gas Pipeline Project. Furthermore, Dan Sullivan, current commissioner of Alaska's Department of Natural Resources and former Alaska Attorney General and former Assistant Secretary of State in the Bush administration, is a former Perkins attorney. Now, these findings comes in the immediate aftermath of a recent investigation revealing the contractor hired by Obama's U.S. State Department to do the supplemental environmental impact statement for the northern half of TransCanada's Keystone XL Tar Sands Export Pipeline, Environmental Resource Management, Inc., lied on June 2012 conflict of interest filing. The ERM group checked the box on the form saying it had no current business ties to TransCanada. In fact, ERM, a member of the American Petroleum Institute, which has spent over $22 million lobbying on tar sands and Keystone XL since 2008, does maintain business ties to TransCanada, the investigation revealed. This includes an ongoing consulting relationship with South Central LNG, co-owned by TransCanada, ExxonMobil, British Petroleum, and ConocoPhillips. Under 18 U.S. Section 1001, making, quote, materially false, fictitious, or fraudulent statement or representation to the executive, legislative, or judicial branch of the government of the United States, end quote, is a crime punishable by up to 5 years in jail. On top of this, his job at Perkins Coie, Bauer, a well-known architect of bending campaign finance laws to allow more corporate money to flow into election races, served as general counsel to President Obama's 2012 re-election campaign. He also serves as general counsel to the Democratic National Committee and did electoral work for John Kerry 2004's presidential campaign. His wife, Anita Dunn, is the co-owner of DNS Knickerbocker, former Obama communications director, senior advisor for Obama's 2012 re-election campaign, is the former communications director for the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee under then-Senator Kerry. She met with top Obama administration officials more than 100 times since leaving in 2009, according to a New York Times investigation. Dunn currently does public relations work on behalf of TransCanada and Freight Rail Industry Lobbying Group, American Association of Railroads. The tar sands pipeline boom comes alongside a freight rail boom to carry tar sands, crude, and fracking oil from North Dakota's Bakken Shale. Quote, EARM lied on its conflict of interest disclosure form and state with either asleep at the wheel or chose to look the other way, end quote. So, given the myriad ties that bind, looking the other way appears more plausible. So, they lied, They broke the law, but the likelihood is they'll get away with it because that's what power does. Now, I'm going to play a clip in a moment about fascism in the United States. Please pay attention to what is being said, because we have become a surveillance nation. Our rights have been abrogated, and I think it's time that we said no more. This comes from, this is short, very short. It's from the Washington blog. It says, why doesn't the government use its mass surveillance to bust the big criminals, the banksters? The big banks have committed massive crimes and manipulated virtually every market. The failure to prosecute fraud is preventing a substantial economic recovery. As such, prosecuting Wall Street fraud is arguably an issue of national security. The government is collecting everything and spying on everything we do. So why can't it gather info on the crimes of the big banks so we can prosecute them? You might assume that spying is only used to stop terrorism. But the government has, in fact, often invoked national security powers in regards to the financial system. For example, Business Week reported on May 23, 2006, quote, President George W. Bush has bestowed on his intelligence czar, Nicholas Negroponte, broad authority in the name of national security to excuse publicly traded companies from their usual accounting and securities disclosure obligations. Reuters noted in 2010, quote, U.S. security regulators originally treated the New York Federal Reserve's bid to keep secret many of the details of the American International Group, AIG, bailout like a request to protect matters of national security, according to emails obtained by Reuters. Now, this is especially true given that some of the biggest banks have been caught actively assisting terrorists. Unfortunately, spying is being used to crush dissent and specifically to protect the banks and targets those who are trying to hold the banks accountable, end quote. In line of that, we have one more thing. This is from William Black. This is very important. Please make note of this. Two sentences that explain the crisis and how easy it was to avoid. Quote, everyone should read and understand the implications of these two sentences from 2011 report of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, the FCIC. Quote, from 2000 to 2007, appraisers ultimately delivered to Washington's officials a petition signed by 11,000 appraisers. It charged that lenders were pressuring appraisers to place artificially high prices on properties. According to the petition, lenders, quote, were blacklisting honest appraisers and instead assigning businesses only to appraisers who would hit the desired price targets, end quote. Now, these two sentences tell us more about the crisis cause and how easy it was to prevent than all those books published about the crisis combined. Here are the implications. The lenders are extorting the appraisers to inflate the appraised value of something. No honest lender would inflate an appraisal. The lender's great protection from loss. The lenders were overwhelmingly the source of mortgage fraud. The lenders were not only fraudulent, but following the recipe for accounting control fraud. They were deliberately making enormous numbers of bad loans. And this had to be done with the knowledge of the bank CEOs. One of the wonderful things about being a CEO is the ability to communicate to employees and agents without leaving an incriminating paper trail. Sophisticated CEOs running large accounting control frauds can use compensation and business and personal decisions to send three key messages. A, you will make a lot of money if you report exceptional results. B, I don't care whether the reports are true or the raw results are fraud. And three, if you do not report exceptional results or if you block loans from being approved by insisting on effective underwriting and honest appraisals, you will suffer and your efforts will be overruled. The appraiser's petition was done, of course, over 7 years. Even if you assume, contrary to fact, that the CEOs did not originate the plan to inflate that appraisals, the CEOs knew that they were making enormous numbers of fraudulent liars' loans with fraudulent appraisals. So that's it. Everyone knew that everyone was lying about the value of these appraisals and the people's capacity to have them if they went forward. because that is what they do. And finally, before we go to our tape here in a moment, this is from Norman Solomon, and it is published in Common Dreams. The title is Denouncing the National Security Agency Surveillance Isn't Enough. We Need the Power to Stop It. For more than a month, outrage has been profuse in response to news about NSA surveillance and other evidence that all three branches of the U.S. government are turning Uncle Sam into Big Brother. Now what? Continuing to expose and denounce the assaults on civil liberties is essential. So is supporting Bradley Manning, Edward Snowden, and other whistleblowers, past, present, future. But these vital efforts are far from sufficient. At the core of the surveillance state is the hollowness of its democratic pretenses. Only with authentic democracy can we save ourselves from devastating evisceration of the First, Fourth, and Fifth Amendments. For a moment, walk a mile in the iron-heeled shoes of the military-industrial digital complex. Its leaders don't like clarity, but what they're doing, and they certainly don't like being exposed or denounced, but right now the surveillance state is in no danger of losing what it needs to keep going. Power. The huge digitech firms and the government have become mutual tools for gaining humongous profits and tightening political control. The partnerships are deeply enmeshed in the military and surveillance realms. Whether cruise missiles and drones or vast metadata database records and capacities to squirrel away trillions of emails, at the core of their surveillance state is the hollowness of its democratic pretenses. Only with authentic democracy can we save ourselves from devastating evisceration of the First, Fifth, and Fourth Amendment. The enormous corporate leverage over government policies doesn't change the fact that the nexus of the surveillance state, then the only organization with enough potential torque to reverse its anti-democratic trajectory, is the government itself. The necessity to subdue the corporate military forces that have so extensively hijacked the government, to do that, we'll need to accomplish what progressives are currently ill-positioned for, democratic mobilization to challenge the surveillance state's hold on power. I would agree with that. Now, here are some comments from a number of people, some you know, some you don't, and experts testifying and whistleblowers testifying, edited together to give you an idea of how bad it actually is.
Good evening, everybody. President Obama and British Prime Minister Gordon today calling for a new world order to tackle our global economic crisis.
It's been a long time coming, but tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America.
All right, folks, there's a lot going on right now. Decisions being made that are unprecedented and will have an overreaching impact on what it means to live in the United States of America. Both the Senate and the House of Representatives have just overwhelmingly passed the National Defense Authorization Act. Squeezed into this military funding bill are two provisions that give the military not just lots and lots of money, but lots and lots of power as well.
A new generation of surveillance drones could soon be watching us all. The Federal Aviation Administration is expected to announce plans to expand the use of domestic drones in American airspace.
Well, get ready to look up at the sky and see drones hovering above. As of now, unmanned aircraft could only be used by military airspace and by certain law enforcement agencies. But this week, Congress passed a bill that would allow for commercial and private use of the drones.
I have two words for you. Predator drones. You will never see it coming. You think I'm joking?
We're shopping and dining over Thanksgiving and maybe watching some football games. Big government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. Senators John McCain and Carl Levin want to enact a law that would declare the entire United States of America a battlefield for the military. They're talking about inserting the Army into domestic law enforcement. Senator Lindsey Graham, who supports this bill, says, quote, "The homeland is part of the battlefield. and people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
The Department of Homeland Security buying ammunition, now looking to purchase another 21 million rounds of ammunition. This in addition, of course, to the 1.6 billion rounds that Homeland Security has bought in just the past 10 months. Now, to put all of this in perspective, the military used approximately 70 million rounds each year of the Iraq War. 70 million rounds in a war.
If you look at what the Department of Homeland Security has been purchasing over the last year, it comes out to like 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition, more than 7,000 fully automatic assault weapons, 2,700 MRAP type vehicles, and now drones. Those are instruments of war. Department of Homeland Security's, who are they going to fight a war against?
Something happened. Something happened.
Robert Whitaker, the tactical supervisor for El Paso SRT, for Homeland Security Investigation. Well, we have our big vehicle out here. It's an armored vehicle. It's an AMRAP vehicle. It's mine resistant, ambush protected. That's what it stands for. That's what we use to deliver our team to high-risk warrant services.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order.
Important breaking news out of Boston. A pair of bombings rocked the finish line at the historic Boston Marathon.
It was never meant that we would have this gigantic police force from the federal government. I mean, we had martial law up there, FBI and all these agents coming in, closing things down, going to people's houses. Do we close down cities because there's 10 murders over the weekend in Chicago? We don't do that. But here we closed down a whole city, not even allowed to go to a baseball game. I mean, I think it's very, very scary when I look at some of those pictures.
The military likes to perform war games, so that's why we're seeing military on the streets practicing. They are actually practicing. The tanks that we see on the streets and the National Guard patrolling neighborhoods and the practices that they're doing with our local police department, this is all in preparation for martial law, so that when they do actually lock down the country, they've got everything secured.
But I think what we're starting to see, for anybody who is objective at all, is we're seeing a totalitarian system now unveil itself. And ever since essentially 9/11 happened, it's been more and more of these draconian measures that are leading us right down the road to martial law.
Particularly to hear President Obama claim the power to keep people in prison indefinitely with no charges against them, no conviction, no sentence, just imprisonment. It's particularly stunning to hear him make that claim in the middle of a speech that was all about the rule of law.
This last week, the U.S. Congress passed a bill which repeals the Posse Comitatus, which means that we have now institutionalized and codified martial law. Right now, the battle against terrorism involves all of us. Everybody in this country is a potential terrorist.
We don't even understand freedom anymore. We are a country that is headed towards socialism, totalitarianism, beyond your wildest imagination. I have to tell you, I'm doing a story tonight that I wanted to debunk these FEMA camps. I'm tired of hearing. You know about them?
Sure.
I'm tired of hearing. I wanted to debunk them. Well, we've now for several days done research on them. I can't debunk them.
The company has now implanted two workers with microchips to monitor their movements, causing some to charge invasion of privacy. The company says it's merely a layer of security beyond key cards and clearance codes. I don't get one of those soon. Well, joining me now is Lance Ulanoff, editor-in-chief of PC Magazine. Lance, this sounds like some freaky science fiction book. Tell us what this is about. These two workers have microchips?
Right. Well, this is very, very real, and these microchips are about the size of a grain of rice. They get injected into your skin.
Futuristic film. Humans injected with a tiny chip holding the key to all of their private information.
But as you're about to see in our CBS 46 investigation, it's not fiction. In fact, it's being marketed in Georgia as life-saving technology. Life-saving technology.
We have a Florida family who are really pioneers in a brave new world. They have volunteered to be the first ever
to have microchip identification devices implanted into their body.
It is the first implantable microchip for humans. It has multiple security, financial, and healthcare applications.
One thing I would just suggest, I'm just an outside, soon-to-be investor. I love this idea, by the way, Scott. I think it's...
The Northside Independent School District in San Antonio has put tracking chips in the ID badges for more than 4,000 high school students.
Well, it looks and sounds like something out of the future, but a new palm scanning device will help Bossier Parish schools keep better track of what children are eating there. The electronic device will be implemented at all Bossier Parish schools.
Let's bring down the volume. This is not about tracking students to see what they ate for lunch. And this is not about workers being properly identified in case they have a heart attack. This is about being able to control the whereabouts and knowledge of what a person represents. I'll do more on this with some experts on an upcoming program. My guest is standing by. Let's go over and say hello to Dr. Stephen Goldsmith. I gave the bio to Dr. Goldsmith earlier in the program, and his book is The Healing Paradox, The Revolutionary Approach to Treating and Curing Physical and Mental Illness. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Gary.
Over the past year or two, I have seen an increase in the personal attacks against people using dietary modification, lifestyle modification, yoga, meditation, mind-body medicine, nutrition. And almost without exception, when we investigate, we see it's bad science. And yet, when we try to challenge this and offer real truth, we are given no form, and yet these people seem to have no trouble getting in the New York Times and USA Today and Wall Street Journal and Washington Post. Please take us on a journey, if you would, explaining the difference between the type of medicine that you and others practice and what the conventional or strictly orthodox approach practices when it comes to determining how a person should be helped.
I'd be happy to, Gary. Our conventional Western medical system is dominated by an adversarial approach towards disease, in which it considers disease the enemy and combats it or attempts to combat or oppose it. And this approach actually prevents the cure of disease and keeps us sick. And we can see evidence of this in the ever-increasing percentage of our population, Gary, that is chronically ill. Whereas the way to actually cure people, to cure illness, is to do the exact 180 degrees opposite of what Western medicine does. So in other words, the paradox that I describe in my book is that what seems to be good treatment from conventional Western medical lights is actually bad, and what seems bad for us is actually good. And if I may, I'll elaborate and explain, because these may sound like odd assertions to your listeners. As I said, we, and the general public as well, thinks of disease as an enemy that it needs to abolish. The main weapon at our disposal in our society are pharmaceuticals, which Western medicine essentially uses as kind of drones to attack disease and its symptoms. The problem is that it's a fundamental and universal law of nature that all living beings, including us, resist attempts to change them by any outside influence, and they do so in order to maintain an inner stability, homeostasis, and in order to survive in the face of environmental threats and disturbances, be they environmental toxins, microbes, even pharmaceuticals, which don't belong in our bodies naturally any more than those others do. And so we're actually, in order to survive, we are hardwired to resist the efforts of Western medical treatment, and in particular, pharmaceuticals. Western medicine is kind of like a football coach who designs all these brilliant offensive plays, ingenious pass patterns and the like, completely neglecting the fact that there is a defense on the other side of the ball that's going to try to stop it, and which is what we do in order to protect ourselves. Now, along with this phenomenon is an allied phenomenon that's so important, that's so overlooked by the medical establishment, and it's what was voiced by Dr. Albert Schweitzer many years ago, and it's that all healing is self-healing. The only way any of us can actually get completely well, the only way that our illnesses can be cured is for our inner healing resources to be mobilized to get ourselves well. Nothing else can do that for us. The best that effective treatment can do, Gary, to enable us to cure ourselves is to support those inner healing resources, to enhance them, to stimulate them. Now, what is going to seem quite odd to many listeners is a different way of thinking of disease, because I believe that we have a completely wrong idea of it. We think of disease as bad, whereas all manifestations of disease, be they fever or inflammation or any kinds of problems, include both the problem, the original problem, and our organism's attempts, our body's attempts to overcome the problem. For example, we might have a bad sore throat or a bad earache with a fever, 101, with a lot of signs of inflammation, redness, heat, swelling, pain, and we think of that automatically as bad. And so we reach for Tylenol or aspirin or what have you, and we reach for antibiotics to suppress these problems without realizing that fever is our own body's way of trying to get rid of an infection, to combat the microbes, which can't survive very well at temperatures above a certain level. So fevers are our body's way of trying to kill microbes and also activating elements in our cells like what are called heat shock proteins that protect ourselves from traumas like infections. So by getting rid of the temperature, the fever, we actually subvert our own body's attempts to cure the problem itself. The same with inflammation. With all of the signs of inflammation that I mentioned, even the development of pus, we think of that as bad, and yes, that is a problem. We don't want that. But inflammation is also caused by our system's attempts to try to overcome the problem. All of those signs, the redness and the pus and so forth, are what our immune system is doing to try to deal with the problem. So rather than just simply attack and try to suppress all signs of disease, what we need to understand better is what our systems naturally try to do and can do to overcome health problems and support those positive aspects in our own systems. So those two points, that we resist attempts to change us from outside influences, including Western medical treatments influences, and the fact that we need to be enabled to heal ourselves, those explain why Western medicine has had such a mediocre track record in terms of curing any illness and even preventing most illness. And actually, a lot of what I said is not really that controversial, because you ask most any Western primary care physician, and he or she will admit, well, yes, most of my patients I don't cure. I manage them with medication and help them cope with their disease. And I firmly believe that we can do much, much better. And there are actually alternative treatment paradigms that both in the field of psychotherapy and psychiatry, and also in the field of the treatment of conventional physical symptoms, that are vastly more successful than Western medical attempts. And yeah, I have
one last question that I think will help wrap your thoughts up neatly for people, because you've given us a beautiful overview. I really appreciate how you integrated many different principles into one concept. One of the ancient principles of early medical practice for many centuries were the laws of harmonics, which is completely absent from the modern medical paradigm. Could you briefly speak on this and the scientific evidence supporting it? And then how does this operate in the practice of homeopathy, for example?
Sure. Well, that's an absolutely terrific question, Gary. And you're absolutely right. For not only centuries, but for more than a millennium, medicine practiced with a view that we consist of a pattern within us, a pattern of relationships that different aspects of us bore with each other. They call them humors. Other societies refer to them as chi, so forth. But our systems consisted of these various interacting forces or elements that for good health to obtain, these various elements, these various aspects of our inner relationships needed to be in balance. And also we needed to be in balance with our external environment, even the cosmos. That's what our ancestors in the medical field believed and practiced. Well, what's happened is over the last century and a half, going on two centuries, Western medicine has gradually divorced itself from an understanding of relationships that we have either within each other or with our environment, and has focused more and more on smaller and smaller particles, so that disease in Western medical eyes has become an issue of bad things. We look for the bad molecules that are too high or too low or have invaded our system. We look for things and then we attack them with pharmaceuticals or radiation or what have you, rather than looking at the imbalance in our systems that are producing disease, because that there's some sort of energetic disproportion or weakness that's predisposing us to develop these kinds of bad things. And so that Western medicine has completely divorced itself from an understanding of patterns of relationships. And you mentioned homeopathy, which in fact does the opposite. Homeopathy is, as some listeners may know, a system of medicine that involves self-healing through the stimulus of the medicines that are used that don't suppress symptoms, but that stimulate people to heal themselves energetically. And we don't exactly know the mechanism for that, but in some sort of fashion, these medicines appear to help people's systems regain an inner balance. So it doesn't deal with things, raising this blood level of that or getting rid of that, but involves an effort to rebalance people. Now, one of the major pieces of misinformation that has been promulgated through the mainstream media is that there's no good evidence that homeopathy works. And that couldn't be farther from the truth, Gary. And for listeners who want to find out more about that, the evidence supporting the efficacy of homeopathy is only a click away. The National Center for Homeopathy.org has about, in its archives on its website, about 200 scientific articles documenting the validity and the efficacy of homeopathy, including a number of randomized double-blind studies.
More than 67 double-blind placebo-controlled studies proving homeopathy worked. In fact, one was from a famous British group of scientists, and they said in their bias that they were expecting it to fail, and lo and behold, it did not fail.
Right.
I thank you for coming on. I want to invite you back for a more extended interview to look at medical paradoxes and how we can understand these. And also, I'm a fan of the great Professor Thomas Kuhn and his classic text, The Structures of Scientific Revolution. I want to be able to discuss that with you. So let us continue our discussion on an upcoming program in the near future, all right?
I'd be delighted to, Gary. Thank you.
Dr. Stephen Goldsmith from Portland, Oregon, the author of The Healing Paradox. Again, he is a unique physician, psychiatrist, holistic, board-certified person. He's also a homeopath, a philosopher of medicine, and held professorships at medical schools of Boston University, Tufts University, and New York University School of Medicine. We're out of time. Thank you all very much for listening. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. My jaw is getting a little better today. But we are picking up the conversation from where we left off with the Zimmerman decision, but what it points to in terms of the need for systemic change.
Great. We look forward to it. Utrice Lead right now.
Have named you.